Good afternoon and welcome to your own health and fitness talk show. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman here live with you every Tuesday at 2, talking to you about healthcare and fitness trends and taking your phone calls. Today's show is about the biochemistry of addiction. With me in the studio is psychotherapist Julia Ross, founder and executive director of Recovery Systems in Mill Valley. I'll be opening up the phone lines as usual for your participation at around 2:40, and that number, as always, for anyone in or out of the area code is 510-848-4425. And also, if those of you who are listening decide that you want a tape of today's show, or if you need to reach me, you can call my information number at 707-769-1458, and I'll give that number out again at the end of the show. This show is intended to be a follow-up to the show I did a couple of weeks ago with Kathleen Desmaisons, author of the book Potatoes, Not Prozac, in which we discussed sugar sensitivity. Today I want to explore more about addiction from a biochemical viewpoint by discussing the potential origins of addictive behavior and how a combination of nutrient and amino acid supplementation therapy can help to break the cycle. We'll also discuss related health problems like food allergies and hormonal imbalances that, ignored, can prevent an individual from recovering fully. So let me welcome Julia, who came over to be here live with us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And let me introduce you. Julia Ross received her master's degree in clinical psychology from Lone Mountain College in San Francisco, and she is a licensed marriage, family, and child therapist. She spent the last 14 years working in the area of addiction treatment, and as early as 1980, while working as director of San Francisco Henry Olhoff, am I saying that right, houses outpatient program, Ms. Ross introduced nutritionists into the treatment programs. This was a new thing. In 1988, she opened Recovery Systems in Mill Valley for the treatment of food as well as alcohol and drug addiction. A faculty member in John F. Kennedy's Graduate Psychology Department and UC Berkeley Extension's Addiction Certificate program, she has produced several audio and video tapes and published a number of articles, including one in the February edition of the American Psychological Association Journal, and coming up in the May issue of Alternative Medicine Digest, there'll be an article about Ms. Ross's work. She's currently working on a book about eating and weight disorders, which we will look forward to seeing. Welcome again. I guess I want to ask you to start out with to sort of lay a groundwork. What prompted you to bring a nutritionist into the area of addiction treatment?
Well, it was desperation, really. We were doing very sophisticated and exciting things in the realm of psychotherapy, and we were providing spiritual tools through the 12-step programs, but our relapse rates were not improving. They were degenerating. And I knew that we had gone to the wall. You know, we'd done as much as we could with psychotherapy and 12-step programs, but we had not addressed the only other avenue that was open to us, and that was the physical problems that might be impacting our clients' recoveries or lack of recoveries.
I remember I interviewed Joan Matthews Larson, who was somebody
Wonderful.
That you had some contact with, who wrote a book called 7 Weeks to Sobriety. And one of the things that she commented on is that when people are in therapy, even when they're really trying their darndest, there are ways in which they can't quite get up over the way that they're feeling.
Well, that's true, and the problem is that that is true for the majority of people battling addictions, whether it's alcohol, drug, or food.
So I guess that prompts the question, is there a profile, physical profile for addiction?
Well, we used to think there was the addictive personality, but I definitely think that it's more like the addictive gene, and there are a number of ways in which physiology can make someone vulnerable to addiction. The primary place is the brain, and people tend to be born with either optimal or suboptimal levels of our four mood primary mood chemicals, and if they're suboptimal, they're going to be looking for help, and that help arrives in the form of chocolate, caffeine, cocaine, marijuana, alcohol, etc. and they are legitimately trying to heal themselves. But unfortunately, these solutions have so many drawbacks that they end up desperate to get rid of the solution, and they end up in recovery. And fortunately now, we have tools that will correct those mood chemistry deficiencies that they can be born with, that get worse with stress, they get worse as they use the addictive substance, so that when they're through with them and they want to get into recovery, they're in a worse position to do so than they ever were, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess another way of saying what you just said is that people attempt to take care of themselves with certain behaviors. They either medicate themselves with foods that increase the happy chemicals in their brain,
right,
which they're deficient in, and then they become, what we learned from Kathleen Demesan's book, because the part of her book which is helpful is the part that talks about the upregulation and downregulation of our receptor sites in sort of as they adjust to how many of these happy chemicals are around. And since people are downregulated and are really, the people who are like this, either genetically, you know, have the predisposition, or, as you said, prolonged stress or other problems.
Malnutrition.
Malnutrition, yeah. You talk about these young women who look in the magazines and say, oh, my God, I don't look like this, and they stop eating. So you've got less of these things, and then you kind of throw a piece of chocolate at someone who is already downregulated, and they get this incredible response, and then that sets them up for addiction. But I guess what we're also talking about is that, as what we just said, is that you can make this situation worse. As you're trying to take care of yourself and you're introducing foods as medication, or you're introducing behavior as medication, like over-exercising,
or gambling, or
anything like that, then you're actually breaking the system down even more. Do you want to explain a little bit about that mechanism?
Yeah. It's really common sense that the brain makes as much as it can of these mood-enhancing chemicals, and when it doesn't have enough and we start using the drugs or behaviors, it gets the message, well, we don't need to make any more of this stuff. These receptor sites are filled. There's no problem. They don't get the message, make more, so that by the time someone quits using these substances that have artificially filled the receptor sites, when they unplug them, there's nothing else there.
And you get a hell of a withdrawal symptom.
Yeah.
Now, there are other things that we'll talk about. There are some health problems that can also occur. But we're also talking about how you get there, how you end up with some of these health problems, along with maybe genetics. And you also talked about this issue of malnutrition. So along with both men and women who, in an attempt to look a certain way, begin to make use of certain things like exercise, and they over-exercise. Or, ironically, somebody may start using artificial sweeteners because they're attempting to
improve their diet.
Yeah,
eliminate
to be
sugar.
To be thinner. And some of these things can cause bloating and stomach distress and malabsorption problems. There can be food allergies. So you've got this sort of whole thing. But one of the things that really grabbed my attention was you mentioned inadequate protein, which is a problem a lot of people have. And why is that important? Why is protein so important?
Well, it's the only food substance that the brain can use to make its mood-enhancing brain chemicals. There is nothing else that you can put into your system that will end up in the brain in the right places.
Yeah, exactly. I just loved hearing someone else say that. All right, and you know, people always say this to me. They say, how come I just can't just, like, eat better to get the right nutrients?
Oh, that's such a common question. And for 6 years in the treatment program at the Henry Olaf House that I ran, we worked with dietitians trying to teach them to eat differently so that they could feel better. And almost universally, they said, we can't eat better because we're too addicted to these bad foods to turn from them to the good foods, you know, to eat more protein, to eat vegetables, to eat whole foods and fresh foods. So that's why we took the next step into using nutritional supplements in addition to recommending an improved diet, because they couldn't just change their diet.
And what we're talking about here, too, as always, is this business of a cascade of different symptoms and problems, that none of these things occur in a vacuum, that they all relate to each other. So as we said, you have a certain behavior pattern and you're doing certain things with food or you're over-exercising or something happens, and then you start to have some other problems like not eating sufficient protein. Over-exercising may affect your thyroid function, for instance, which is going to be critical to your capacity to absorb the proper amino acids and make chemicals and have your other hormones be right. And then you've got problems like gut function. And my impression is that you treat all of these problems when you deal with addiction.
We do. We have so many people who, in misguided efforts to be healthy, for example, have gone for extremely low-fat dieting. And what that means is, because proteins always come with fat and need to, that they've eliminated the protein too. So now we not only don't have any fat, but we don't have any protein, which only leaves us with carbs. And so when people come into us, quite often their blood sugar is very unstable. They may be diabetic because they're only eating carbohydrates, which have such a drug-like effect on the system. It's just a violent assault on the system when we get lots of carbs at once, especially without the modifying proteins and fats.
One of the things we also learn from Kathleen's book is that fat, interestingly, can also raise beta-endorphin levels. We know that carbohydrates will do this to some extent. Certainly sugar does it, which is why sugar's like a drug, because you get this opiate. It's like taking heroin. It's not as quite as powerful, although
for some people it is.
Can be for some people. Certainly is as addictive. And but you can get a beta-endorphin response from eating good fats, by eating natural fats.
And that's why it's so important to put them in the diet, so that you can stop eating. You're satisfied. You get that certain pleasure that only fat can provide. And if you're, you know, depriving yourself of fat, you continue to eat and eat and eat carbohydrates. And the terrible irony there is that the carbohydrates are stored as very poor quality fat because the body can't do anything else with this junk. It's not like a fish fat or a vegetable fat that's so rich in nutrients and it can be used all over the body. These are things that just can be stored for fuel.
I was very touched in one of the articles that you gave me to read about your experience with Indians, American Indians, Native Americans, and the young man who came in who was feeling so terrible and was so broken down, and you started one by one asking him, well, let you tell the story because it's very moving and it also explains how the amino acids work.
Well, it's an interesting story because the head of the Lake County's Tribal Health Counseling Program had heard Joan Matthews Larson on the radio, and it might have been talking to you. And she was just about to resign because she wasn't getting anywhere. There was no success rate at all with the addicted clients that she was trying to help. And so she called Joan Larson's program, and they gave her my number, and she ended up talking to me. And she and one of her counselors and a volunteer who was struggling to stay in sobriety, had had many relapses after many, many efforts at sobriety, they came down to our clinic with a video camera so that I could teach them how to interview and find out what were the nutrient deficiencies and how could they be restored. And this young man had been billed to me as someone who was very eager to do this, that he was interested in his health, that he did some bodybuilding and had used some supplements in the past. But what they didn't tell me was that he was in such a deep depression that he couldn't speak. And he would come to his counseling sessions every week, but he didn't say anything. So I couldn't interview him. So I went out of the office and I consulted with one of the nutritionists, and she said, let's just give him the amino acids right now. And that wasn't something we were in the habit of doing. We were recommending nutrients that people would take home and try. We hadn't tried them in the office. So I came in and I said, I can see that you're very unhappy. Can you tell me what the worst thing is that you're experiencing right now? And he said, I'm so tired. And so I picked up a bottle of tyrosine and I gave him 500 milligrams of tyrosine in a glass of water. And he swallowed it, and we began chatting. The other people in the room were chatting with each other, and one of the counselors from our program who wanted to sit in, because she is partly Native American, was watching him very carefully, and she said, how are you doing right now? And he said, I'm not so tired. And his eyes began to track rather than just looking at the ground. There was a little bit of a sparkle in them, very small, but coming. And so then I asked him the next question, which is, what's the second worst thing that you're experiencing now? And he bent over and he grabbed his stomach and said, I'm really uptight. And and his counselor translated. He's very anxious most of the time. So I gave him one tablet. I just didn't want to overdo any of this, but I figured, you know, these small things aren't going to do much, but we'll try with one of something called Amino Relaxer, which combines GABA with taurine and glycine and a few other little nutrients. Low doses, 100 milligrams of GABA, 300 of glycine and taurine each. And
the glycine, too, right?
And the glycine with it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And again, we waited. This time he was a little bit more involved in the conversation, not much. And again, our counselor, Elizabeth, spotted the minute he started to respond to the supplement, which was only 10 minutes, and asked him again, how are you? Can you feel this? And he said, yeah, I'm not so uptight. And so I kept on going. I knew there were four mood sites that could be depleted, and he looked to me like somebody was probably depleted in all four. So I went to the next one, and I said, he left the room. He had to go to the bathroom. He left the room, and while he was gone, his counselor said that he had been in tremendous emotional pain from the time he was born because of the amount of physical violence in his family. He loved them, and they couldn't stop when they were drinking, hurting each other and him. And so, and he was 26, had been going along a long time. So he came back in, and I said, your counselor has told me that you're in a lot of pain. And he nodded. And I said, because of your family situation. And so I said, I have another supplement for you. And this was a supplement that was 300 milligrams of DL-phenylalanine and a little glutamine. And I gave him one capsule. 10 minutes later, we all were watching him carefully by this time, and 10 minutes later we asked him how he was, and he said, just right.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you sure that, you know, this is such a little, small amount of nutritional supplementation? Mm-hmm. Our European-American clients take, you know, 2 to 4 times more than this. And he looked at me very seriously, and he said, and he shook his head, and he said, just right. And he continued to take those small amounts of nutrient supplements and continued to be a different person.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. This is Health Integration Specialist Elena Berman, and I'm in the studio live with Julia Ross, who is an MFCC and is the Executive Director of Recovery Systems in Mill Valley. We're discussing addiction from a biochemical standpoint, and she's just told us a very moving story about treating a Native American man with amino acids and how profound it was. One of the reasons it's so profound is that people in certain genetic groups, in certain ethnic groups, are efficient. Their bodies are very efficient. And one of the things that's sort of funny about people who have a tendency to develop these kinds of addictions is that part of the reason that they're susceptible is that their bodies are so efficient and very sensitive. But what you've just told is the most profound way to explain why we should maybe take aminos or vitamins or whatever it is that we need when we're deficient, and that looking for deficiencies in enhancing someone's health with optimizing their health, not just giving them a chance to survive, can make a difference, particularly with pathologies and addiction. So it's a wonderful story. So we've talked about a number of amino acids that work very profoundly. They're in Joan Matthew Larson's book, 7 Weeks to Sobriety. Do you have a list that you publish, or I presume it'll be in your book when you come out?
Yes, there's a book that's helpful, two books that I can think of, in addition to Joan's book, that are specifically about the brain and how nutrients create our mood. One of them is called Alcohol and the Addictive Brain, and it's by Kenneth Blum, who is the biochemistry professor who is really responsible for educating all of us about amino acid therapy. And the other book is called The Healing Nutrients Within.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah.
There's a 1997 update of a wonderful book, a peerless book, really, on amino acid therapy. And the primary author is Carl Pfeiffer, who's now dead, but his co-author is living and did the update, whose name is Braverman.
Yeah, well, I had him on the show, actually. It was quite a memorable show, but we weren't talking about that book. Pfeiffer, incidentally, is spelled P-F, is it I-E? Yeah, I can't spell worth a darn, but it's P.F. Pfeiffer. So it's The Healing Nutrients Within. That's a Keats publication. And Alcohol and the Addictive Brain is Kenneth Blum. So those are some books that people can look at. There are hormones also that help. We've already talked about going in when you've got someone who has a certain sort of symptoms that may indicate that they've done some damage to the thyroid with their behavior pattern or that they're genetically. So I know you check thyroid.
Sure.
There's
do.
A whole thing with sleep with people with addiction.
There is, and it's one thing that this young man that we just talked about didn't have. He didn't have sleep disorders. He wasn't irritable. He could tolerate heat. In other words, he didn't have the symptoms of low serotonin, and the list of low serotonin symptoms is ghastly. You know, it's a particular type of depression that can be suicidal. It's every spectrum of irritability to rage. It's panic attacks, phobias. It's winter depression. It's cravings for food, alcohol, and drugs like pot at night, afternoon and evening cravings, which is when serotonin levels drop. Winter and evening are their lowest ebb. And so when we have somebody with a sleep disturbance and they have these mood symptoms as well, then in the past we were stumped because we didn't have access to the one amino acid that creates serotonin in the brain, and that's L-tryptophan. And L-tryptophan is very hard to get in food. There are very few foods that have enough tryptophan to make a bit of difference. But in the last few years, L-tryptophan is back, available by prescription. In this area, there's a compounding pharmacy carrying it in Berkeley and at Abbott's Pharmacy, but every community has a compounding pharmacy, and most of them are carrying L-tryptophan now.
By prescription.
There is an over-the-counter form of L-tryptophan that's been available just for a few months in some health food stores. It's called 5-hydroxytryptophan, and it's somewhere halfway between tryptophan and serotonin. It's a nutrient that has had a lot of research in stopping cravings, improving mood and sleep, but not long-term research for the most part, whereas L-tryptophan, you know, has many, many years of safe usage. So we're a little bit conservative about using 5-hydroxy, and we prefer for people to get the prescription type of tryptophan. And all of these amino acids, I think it's important for your listeners to know, are repair tools. They're not long-term maintenance. They allow you the kind of balance and freedom from food cravings that makes it possible to turn to really healthy foods and make those foods the basis of your continued health. And then you don't really need the supplements anymore.
One of the things that I had a little bit of a problem with the book Potatoes, Not Prozac, is that there are people who just adding in some good complex carbohydrates to get the tryptophan to turn into serotonin, et cetera, and not using vitamin therapy. It doesn't quite kick them over the edge, so it doesn't work. The other thing is that when you start dealing with people and playing with their food, one of the things that you discover is that often people have either severe trigger foods, which is what happens with this kind of sugar sensitivity and allergy stuff, which she talks about, but she isn't talking about actual food allergies. And there are so many people with grain allergies. And allergies to grain can not only give you, you know, the sort of bloating, which scares people so that they then don't eat, but it also can destroy the mucosa of their stomach so that then you have gut problems, so they're not absorbing anything.
And then they're so hungry constantly that they
gnawing,
can't stop eating.
They can't stop. And grain allergies often produce anxiety. That's one of the symptoms of grain allergies. So food allergies can't be ruled out. You have to kind of look at every little component with each individual and see what's what with each person.
We've been very surprised that there are three food allergies that we see, and we rarely see anything else. We don't have people coming in with a great, you know, host of sensitivities associated with their addictions, but the foods are the gluten-containing grains, the family that is wheat, rye, oats, and barley, cow dairy products, and sugar. And those are the substances that people are having allergic addictive reactions to. Mm-hmm. And it turns out we know that sugar, you know, and I think that's one of the virtues of Potatoes Not Prozac, is she's very clear about how sugar can trigger endorphin activity and act like a drug in some people's brains. But
most, I think, even in healthy people's brains, if
yes,
they abuse it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just a kind of a spectrum of intensity.
Incidentally, healthy is a funny word, so I take that word back.
non-sensitive.
Thank you. Yeah.
The grains and the dairy products contain a substance that will also trigger endorphin activity. So it's part of how we get these allergy addictions.
They're comfort foods, and when people get depressed, they go to things that comfort them. And it's sugar, and it's starches, and it's baked goods like your grandmother made. You know, we all have sort of familial... So there's societal stuff here, too. You don't separate the head and the body.
It's hard.
It's not a joke when we say mind-body stuff work together. We're going to break in a few seconds. I'm trying to think what I can add in here before we break. You know, along with food allergies, we need to emphasize that sugar comes in a variety of different names. So we're dealing with all concentrated forms of sugar, even fruit juice, concentrated fruit juice. The other thing is that we've already mentioned to stay away from artificial sweeteners, but one of the reasons also for staying away from junk foods, and you all know what that means, is that there are chemicals in the foods, and the chemicals will give you gnawing in your stomach and bloating and all kinds of symptoms that will freak you out and make you think you ought to stop eating or purge. And it's also interesting to note this thing about that purging and binging and fasting, so when people go on fasts, raises your endorphin levels. So you're medicating yourself there, too, as well as over-exercising. I think we're getting close to needing to take a short break. What we're going to do is break for about 30 seconds, and then we'll come back. This is Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman. I'm live in the studio with Julia Ross, MFCC, who is Executive Director and Founder of Recovery Systems in Mill Valley, California, and we're discussing the biochemistry of addiction. We're going to take a brief break. We'll come back, talk for another 10 minutes, and then we'll open up the phone lines, so hang tight. Welcome back. This is Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman, your own health and fitness. We're doing a show today on addiction, the biochemistry of addiction. We're also going to talk a bit about eating disorders. And my guest is MFCC Julia Ross, who is Executive Director and Founder of Recovery Systems in Mill Valley, California. I mentioned before we went to break that binging, purging, and fasting, as well as over-exercising, raise endorphin levels, which can get low in certain people when they're depressed, and so they engage in these activities, and then it causes this whole cascade of stuff that we talked about that needs to be repaired. But we didn't really talk about eating disorders as a sort of topic, so why don't you go ahead and have at.
Well, the reason that I have become an eating disorder specialist is that the majority of my alcohol and drug-addicted clients, when they got clean and sober, became profoundly addicted to high-carbohydrate foods, and in some cases, fatty foods. And that led them into purging, oftentimes, you know, full-blown compulsive eating, bulimia. And in some cases, primarily because they lose so much zinc in the course of an alcohol addiction, they lost their appetite. Zinc is critical for appetite. And they really hadn't been eating. They'd just been drinking. So anorexia began to appear among these clients.
That's very important that you mention the connection between anorexia and zinc. I'm glad you brought that up.
The only other physical thing that we see commonly associated with anorexia is sensitivity to the gluten-containing grains that are destroying the gut lining, so that whenever they eat, they feel fat and bloated, even though their weight isn't there. And when we can relieve that kind of bloating, it's such a tremendous relief to them. And helps them to eat food when they know what foods are safe that aren't going to bloat them up. The other thing that's so important is that because most eating disorders are triggered by low-calorie dieting these days, they're not so much, you know, profound psychological issues as, you know, very concrete consequences of low-calorie dieting. One of the first nutrients that goes down in a low-calorie dieting is tryptophan, which is what we need to make serotonin, which gives us confidence in ourselves. And so in that way the eating disorder gets perpetuated by the malnutrition, the continuing malnutrition.
You know, again, what we're looking at here is a situation where, when you said to me that the eating disorders have less to do with psychology than they do with, the sort of thing that happens. I know that you also believe that there's a psychological link to this.
Absolutely.
And what occurs to me over and over again when I've spoken to people with eating disorders is that people always are trying to take care of themselves. It's just that with all of us, if there's, you know, if the messages that you receive as a child or from society are confusing and counter each other, then you're gonna head into perverse behaviors. I mean, if there's a perverse societal rule or if there's a perverse familial rule, you're going to attempt to sort of fit yourself in with this. And then what happens, I think, is that people lose the capacity to know how to take care of themselves. And really what they're doing with these odd behaviors is trying to take care of themselves. They're either trying to medicate themselves or, anyway, they are trying to take care of themselves. And the question that comes up is, even though you can add some, you know, the nutrients back to make them more able to make happy chemicals, which I'm sure makes it a lot easier to give
it
up
does.
Some of these behaviors, I still wonder what happens if you don't address this issue of permission, because a lot of people with eating disorders, in my experience, when I've encountered them, have a sort of, and this is in men and women, have a profound lack of sense of permission to either be there at all, which is why they're not eating, or to take care of themselves or to be nice to themselves. I mean, there's this mixed up thing there. It's very moving. It's very sad.
That's the whole social brainwashing element of it, and we work very hard to deprogram people from what we call the beauty cult, because unless, you know, they can live with whatever their genetic body shape was intended to be, we can't help them, because we can't help them starve, and we can help them, however, from suffering overwhelming food cravings and having a lot of unnecessary weight gain, and that is one of the greatest and most easily accomplished nutritional tasks that we have.
How do you get somebody ready to be different, though? Because I suspect that when you remove the addictive behavior, even if you're making them feel better physically, there's going to be a wave of anxiety because they've held on to these behaviors as a way to survive.
In some of our clients, there is that the addictive behavior has been kind of muddying the water, so they don't have to deal with what's down underneath. But in many of our clients, they've already been in therapy for years,
uh-huh.
and there really isn't anything left. This is the piece that's undone. This mm-hmm. is the piece that needs to be corrected.
You also use some other therapies, I think. Don't you use using acupuncture?
Yes.
Or is it just, yeah?
We do. We find acupuncture very helpful when we're eliminating tobacco addictions, heroin addictions, particularly those two, to make people more comfortable by raising the levels of the feel-good
yeah.
brain chemicals.
Mm-hmm. I guess the last thing I want to bring up is another experience that I've had is that not everybody can afford to go to a treatment center. And that's one of the nice things about you writing a book and Joan Matthews Larson writing a book and making it easier for people to get educated. And it's also why I try to talk about these things. So I'm wondering if we end the show by talking a bit about, I also want you to give out your numbers and stuff, but if we sort of take a moment to give advice to people who may be a little bit alone dealing with some of this stuff, if there are some things that you can tell them to do that. I mean, we've discussed two books that people can read.
Right. If if they put together Joan Matthews Larson's book, 7 Weeks to Sobriety, and if they're not addicted to alcohol, if they substitute the word carbohydrate,
that inside the book. Mm-hmm.
They'll have very good guidance. And one of the things about using that book is to remember that there's a big section in the back that helps you tailor the book to you. She gives you kind of a lowest common denominator program to start with, but then if it doesn't work, there's lots of good little tables in the back that say, you know, if you're a paranoid and depressed
mm-hmm.
Addict, here are some of the nutrients that are helpful for you. If you're an anxious and depressed, you know, here, let's combine these two. And so she helps you to tailor a program.
The book is called 7 Weeks to Sobriety. The author, again, is Joan Matthews Larson, and it is published by Fawcett, Fawcett. If you do not see it in your bookstore, please don't call me. Call your bookstore, tell them the name of the book, tell them the author, tell them the publisher, and let them order it for you if you want the book.
It's just come out in a revised fourth edition.
So it should be available if people call their bookstores, and that's what they want to do, is get the book. I guess the last thing I would say is that exercise, there are things you can do to increase feel-good chemicals without medicating yourself. In other words, prudent and kind of balanced amounts of exercise and meditation, and any of these things can also be abused, but...
Well, one of the other things that you remind me of is light therapy, especially
yes.
in a winter as deep as the one we've just had. We have lots of people who, even though they're getting supplemented with tryptophan to raise their serotonin levels, the darkness discourages serotonin production. And so we encourage people to get therapeutic lamps. Office Depot has a $30 full-spectrum
really?
Therapeutic lamp. Yes, it's a great task light.
Wow.
And you know, the occasional visit to a tanning booth when things get really tough can be helpful, too.
Yeah, the only thing we learned, I did a show on SAD, and one thing that the person who wrote the book suggested was that you also kind of make sure that you, if you have a mild form of this, you don't want to go all the way to a light box, because you can get yourself manic if you overdo it.
The light boxes are very bright.
Strong.
That's why we like these lamps that you can get at the Office Depot, because they're 2,000 lumens, which isn't all that bright, but it's bright enough to trigger some steady serotonin encouraging release.
How can people get a hold of you and your clinic if they would like to?
They would call 415-383-3611.
And why don't you repeat that again?
415-383-3611.
And that is to get in touch with Recovery Systems in Mill Valley, which is, we have Julia Ross here, who is the executive director of that clinic. And as always, if people miss information that's on the show, there is a sheet that I give, and it's in a binder at the front desk of KPFA, which is 510-848-6767, and you dial the operator at zero. And any show that I do, there'll be a sheet, and she can take it out of the binder and read you all the numbers that were there. So if you get confused, let's open up the phone lines and get some of these people in to ask you some questions. The number, again, if people want to get hold of us and participate in the show, is 510-848-4425. Again, 510-848-4425. You will be talking with Joan Matthews. I'm sorry. Whew, one of Joan Matthew Larson's friends, Julia Ross. And the show is on addiction. Let's go to our first caller, Ed in L.A.
Yeah, hi. I used to have a big problem with pot. It's been about 3 years since I have smoked any, but it was heavily in the evenings at that time, and since then, since stopping, I've turned to food, fatty foods, carbohydrate foods, probably compulsive overeating, and one thing that really raised my curiosity that you talked about was that irritability.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I don't even go to the movies hardly at all anymore, because just all the sounds and everything that I hear in there just drive me, crazy, and it's like the only relief I get is when I get out of there. I didn't know if that was the kind of irritability you were talking about.
That's a very good question. You know, it sounds like attention deficit, and which is usually a combination of deficiencies of norepinephrine and serotonin. So the irritability part of it would be low serotonin. And also, are you having trouble sleeping without the pot?
For a little while I did. I tend to have some minor bouts of what I refer to as insomnia. But
are you a night owl?
No, I tend to be very much a morning person.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking about thyroid, because a high carbohydrate diet can suppress thyroid function in some individuals, not in all. A low protein diet. And a thyroid problem would make you very sound sensitive, but you would be more, well, it's hard to say. If you're also cold and your hair is, if you're getting dry hair and you're cold a lot and your hands and feet are cold, it's worth
checking. Always hot.
Yeah,
you're always
hot.
That sounds more like low serotonin.
Yeah, it does.
And so when we have somebody who has the picture that you're starting to paint, then we'll look at the use of L-tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan or St. John's wort. Which also encourages the brain to build up serotonin, but the tryptophan is the food that it uses to do that building, so it's often helpful to do the two at the same time.
Great.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay. Yeah, we said good luck. Thanks. Let's go to Ray in San Francisco.
Hi, when you talk about allergens and dependency or tolerance for chemicals that might be addictive. A question I would like to hear addressed is the question of minute amounts, because usually when we think about toxic effects, we think about small amounts, but still we're concentrating on what are the tolerable amounts of any particular toxic substance in the environment or in the food or introduced into the food in processing and so forth. And the question is, can you address the issue of toxicity in the same way that we relate to, say, homeopathic medication, that is to say, very minute amounts?
Ray, it sounds like you're talking about a different topic than what we're talking about today. We're talking about addiction. We're talking about food addiction and eating disorders today.
I thought you also said you were addressing allergens. Maybe I missed something or read.
Yeah, no, we are, but we're talking mostly about food allergies as they relate to addiction. A brief answer to your question would be to follow your nose in terms of your intuition about homeopathic remedies and minute dilutions. There's a thing in with chemicals where they say allowable limits, but people react differently depending on who they are and what's going on with them.
Well, let me rephrase the question then. Maybe what I'm asking you is this: specifically in your practice, do you see very minute amounts of toxic materials having a pronounced effect on your patients?
Well, when you say toxic materials, the thing that we mostly see is, you know, the toxicity of alcohol or marijuana or cocaine or whatever, and usually by the time they get to us, their tolerance is enormous and they're using lots of these toxic substances. So we don't tend to see the real super sensitives.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Let's go to Tammy in San Jose. Tammy in San Jose?
Yes, hi. I was calling to find out, my main diet is almost all completely carbohydrates, and I don't even
you're not alone
know where to begin now to start over for that, because I don't feel satisfied unless I have that in my diet every day.
Everybody needs some carbohydrate in their diet, but it sounds like if you're not interested in proteins and fats and vegetables and things, that you're having a problem. You're addicted to carbohydrates. And so then the question would be, what's causing that? Is it, do you tend to crave them more at the end of the day than you do in the beginning? Or
I don't have any fats in my diet, and right now no protein. It's just all carbohydrates.
Okay. And so from morning till night, that's all you eat?
All I want is like cream of wheat.
Cream of wheat all day? Okay.
So nice, refined, bleached carbohydrates that have been processed, too.
Well, not only that, but it's all wheat, which is one of, remember I said there were only three food groups, sugar, dairy, and wheat. And wheat is a very difficult one. It can grab you and be highly addictive, and it sounds like that may be what's happening with you. Do you put sugar on your cream of wheat?
Nutrasweet.
Oh.
You know, Tammy, one thing you might experiment with is to, first of all, I would lose the Nutrasweet. There's so many studies done that indicate that it doesn't actually, you might as well, I mean, I'm not telling you to have sugar, but you might as well have sugar. Your body recognizes it as sugar still. And it's a chemical. It has a chemical-like effect because there are inert ingredients that they add to the amino acid. It isn't just the amino acid. But one thing you might experiment with is just substituting, maybe for a week, just having something other than wheat. Have potatoes, have
rice.
Oatmeal, have rice, even have corn, but just don't have any wheat for maybe a week. And then after that, reintroduce the wheat and see if you feel icky. So you might just do it as an experiment.
Okay.
When we have somebody who's really craving carbohydrates wildly, we usually recommend an amino acid called L-glutamine.
Yeah, good stuff.
Which helps the brain to stop being anxious for carbohydrate infusions.
And can you get that through a health food
store? Oh, yes. It's a very popular thing in health food stores. And you take it, in the case like yours, three times a day, away from food, first thing in the morning, mid-afternoon. And you start with the 1-500 and then go up from there till you get some relief from the cravings.
Some people find that taking L-glycine with the L-glutamine makes the L-glutamine work a little better. And L-glycine, both of these, if you buy them in a powdered form, are a little bit sweet tasting too. And L-glycine, although it's an amino acid, has something in it that it reminds the body a little of sugar. So the two of them together tend to balance it nicely. So those, and glycine is real inexpensive. So.
Okay, so if this wasn't an allergy, though, it seemed like a lot of your traits I would have. I have a thyroid.
Ah.
A low thyroid.
So does your cream of wheat give you energy?
Yes, and then I have trouble sleeping.
Tammy, it sounds like there's a number of things that have to be addressed, and my concern is I've got lights blinking on the board here for other people that want to get in, but all of those things work together. Everything in your body functions together, so all of it has to be taken care of.
And you'd be a good candidate for 7 weeks of sobriety to just substitute cream of wheat for alcohol every time it talks about that, and it'll tell you which nutrients to take and how to change your diet.
She's saying just when you read alcohol, read wheat. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Tammy.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
David in Fresno.
Hello?
Yes, David, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just reminded of this strange experiment that you can maybe tell me if it's true or not, but the laboratory rat that will self-inject itself with cocaine rather than food until it dies.
Right.
Which, to me, if we can translate that to humans, which we really can't do directly anyway, but if we could, just for the sake of this argument, it would disprove the idea then that people really want to take care of themselves, because in some ways they're led by society, by other pressures, to really not take care of themselves in a funny way, in a way in which they will be on a path of self-destruction with addiction.
Well, it's no longer their choice. Once they step onto that path, you know, it's like an escalator, you know, you're not moving anymore, it's moving you. And that's the thing that's so hard for people who haven't been addicts to understand. This brain chemistry is unbelievably powerful, and it will overwhelm the strongest moral fiber, unfortunately.
Also, Robert, when we say taking care, what we mean is that when people do certain things and it has a profound effect on them that makes them feel good, they go back. So that's the way in which they're attempting to take care of themselves. It's just that it backfires. So anyway, thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Let's get Robert from San Francisco on the line.
Hello. You mentioned taking L-tyrosine, L-tyrosine and tryptophan as remedially. What dosages do you recommend for that?
Well, we always recommend that people start with the lowest dose available to just make sure that you don't get an adverse effect. You could get, you know, if you tended to have headaches, they might exacerbate your headaches, for example. So you'd want to start with the lowest dose, which is usually 500 milligrams. And then you can go up from there. We usually don't go higher than 2,000 milligrams at a time, which is the equivalent of 4 capsules. So we go from 1 to 4 capsules 2 to 3 times a day.
Pardon me, 500 4 times a day, or
no? When you start with 1 500 milligram capsule,
yeah.
And if that's not enough, you can go to 2 or 3 or 4 capsules each time you take it, and you'd take it twice a day or 3 times a day. For example, if you couldn't sleep, you'd take it tryptophan at bedtime, but you'd probably take tyrosine in the morning to help you wake up.
Right.
The only caution I have about tyrosine is, as usual, I'm making a thyroid comment. People who have a diagnosed case of thyroiditis where they have inflammation in the thyroid need not to use tyrosine, because tyrosine stimulates thyroid function. So if your thyroid is just a little low, stimulating it will be good. If your thyroid is inflamed and you stimulate it, it makes you feel bad. So just to watch out for tyrosine for those people who have a diagnosed condition.
And one final question. You mentioned proteins are the greatest requirement to make these mood-enhancing chemicals.
Yes.
And what form of proteins does it seem to like?
Oh, good question. It varies a bit from person to person, but generally the more the better. So to have at least 20 grams, which is about, you know, a couple of eggs, chicken breast, at each meal.
Mm-hmm. But beyond that, what sources of protein? I mean, there's different kinds of protein, obviously.
Well, if you do well with soy protein, for example, you could have tofu and tempeh. If you don't, I get a stomach ache from it if I have it more than once a week. Then you need to do fish, chicken. You can do beans. You can do combinations of whole grains and beans, nuts. And
depends.
Seeds are a good source.
Depends on what you tolerate and what you absorb well. Also, sort of preferred if you're going to use soy products, it's good to use the fermented forms of soy. It's a little safer for you.
What
okay?
about dairy and red meat?
If it works for you in small amounts throughout the day, balanced with the rest of your diet, go for it. Just use organic versions of these things so you're not inhaling tons of chemicals and antibiotics and
hormones.
I see.
Okay, Robert?
Thanks very much.
All right, thanks. Let's move on to Dan in San Mateo. Dan in San Mateo, are you there?
Yes, I am. I've had a lot of nagging health problems that the mainstream medical profession has yet to be able to diagnose, and one of them is fatigue, and I've been sleeping about 10 hours a day, and I'm a 21-year-old male.
Wow.
And also, I'm experiencing like a real acute redness of the face and a kind of a heat. And I, you know, they tested me for diabetes and they've tested my thyroid. And
did
they check
you
really?
For lupus? Oh, let's do this in concert. Did they check you for lupus?
Pardon me?
Did they check you for lupus?
No, I don't believe they did.
A mask of redness around the face, if it's around the nose and eyes, if it looks a little bit like a raccoon mask.
Well, it's the whole face, okay. Except for the forehead. It's kind of it is under my eyes a little bit.
When you say that they checked your thyroid out, what did they test?
Well, the level was, it read out to, I think it was 1.2.
Of what? TSH?
I'm not really sure.
Well, there's one test that they, when they say we've tested it, that they give, and it's the TSH, and it's not a reliable gauge. And when somebody is tired, especially a man and a young man like you, you want to throw all the tests in and test the T4 and the T3 and the T3 uptake and the FTI and thyroid antibodies.
Yeah, the antibody is an important one.
I've been really frustrated with how I've been treated. They tend to think that they know that everything's okay
I know.
With me. And
there are certain physicians who have banded together all over the country to treat the thyroid in a more sensitive way, really paying attention to symptoms and not just, you know, looking at one test result. And if you want to call our office, 415-383-3611, we'll give you the number for that foundation so that you can get a local physician who will be sensitive to you.
Is that kind of redness usually associated with low thyroid?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
It actually, to me, sounds like it could be food allergies, because I've seen people, or chemical allergies, I've seen people get red and ruddy from an allergic reaction. Or you could have rosacea, which is a whole other thing. But you want
very random.
Right. Hmm. Well, it could be an allergic response.
Do you eat much wheat?
No.
The chemicals will give him if he's becoming chemically sensitive. But we're not doctors, so you need to pursue it with a physician.
Right, and I'm also experiencing a great thirst.
Yeah, well, you need to be checked out by someone, but we've got to let you go.
So call us for the number.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Sure. Bye.
Let's move on to Lori in Ventura.
Hello.
Go ahead, Lori.
Okay. I have two quick questions. Firstly, are there any nutritional connections for sexual addiction? And secondly, I'm confused about phenylalanine because of this NutraSweet controversy.
Okay.
And I want to know, is D-L-phenylalanine safe?
Good idea. Number one, there are two deficiencies that could result in sexual obsession, and one of them is low endorphin, in which case D-L-phenylalanine might be helpful. The other is low serotonin because it causes obsessiveness of all kinds, and in that case, some form of tryptophan, St. John's wort, would be helpful.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And then in terms of the, what was the second one?
NutraSweet.
It's different. In fact, when we withdraw people from Diet Coke, which we have to do often, we use D-L-phenylalanine so that they continue to get some phenylalanine, but it's not from this sort of toxic source.
Yeah. Well, there are other ingredients in NutraSweet besides the amino acids.
Yeah.
Okay, Lori, thanks for those questions.
Thank you
those were
so
very
much.
Good. I always sort of, in general, with St. John's wort, I always kind of like people to talk to an herbalist, because I've noticed that some people get side effects from St. John's wort if it's not the right one for
them.
Well,
you know, they can get side effects from all of this.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
And so the minute you do, that's not the right thing for you. You know, some people keep taking it thinking there's something wrong with them if they get a side effect.
Sure.
No.
True.
It's just not for you.
And my impression also is that St. John's wort works best with depressive, tired, sleepy kinds of depression rather than anxiety depression. And do you think?
No, we've had a lot of benefit for people who can't sleep. So I think it's an herb, so it has unique effectiveness with different people.
We are out of time.
Oh,
give out your number again.
415 415-383-3611.
Julia Ross at Recovery Systems in Mill Valley, one more time.
415-383-3611.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You were just so gracious and such a good guest.
Thank you.
For those of you who may have missed sections of the show and want to get a tape of today's show, or if you need to reach me, you can call my information number at 707-769-1458. Again, 707-769-1458. For a list of other available shows, send a self-addressed, stamped, business-sized envelope with two stamps, please, to P.O. Box 2714, Petaluma, California, 94953. Next week, I'll be interviewing Dr. Peter Kramer. You may know him as the author of Listening to Prozac. We'll be talking about his new book, Should You Leave? Join us as we explore intimacy and autonomy and the nature of advice. I'm Lena Berman. This has been your own health and fitness talk show on KPFA and KPFK FM. See you next week.